Welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast. This podcast is dedicated to mental wellness for first responders and beyond. Through powerful stories, personal experiences, and expert insights, we explore the challenges and triumphs of maintaining resilience in the face of adversity. Together, we remind you, no one fights alone.
Hey, welcome back to the No One Fights Alone podcast with my new co-host, Ben Pearson. Hey, welcome to the co-host chair there, Benjamin.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
How you doing over there?
No pressure, no stress whatsoever.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does it feel weird being the interviewer? No, because you're
I've got a job where I'm paid to ask questions, and I'm confident that I'm going to be freezing in the questions department while I'm supposed to ask questions. So, yeah. No, I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a good one today because we have our very personal Chateau therapist and friend, Stacy Stocking, today. Welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast, Stacy.
My pleasure. Glad to be here again.
Again.
Got my No One Fights Alone hat on.
You do. You're sporting.
I've got a couple of No One Fights Alone shirts like Brad's got there. I wear them to pickleball, and they always people ask me, you know, hey, what is that? So I get a chance to talk about it when I'm on the pickleball.
Look at you doing advertising out there, doing some marketing on the No One Fights Alone podcast.
Repping.
You are. Well, and you showed, I know the audio listeners can't see it, but if you hold that little injury up that you just incurred, yes, it is a jewel of a black thumb.
That's 10 days old.
Holy cow.
Who? Yeah, my pickleball partner said, get your hand out of my side. Even though I called it, even though I said, it's mine, she said, no, it ain't.
Who knew that pickleball was such a violent sport? It is dangerous.
I didn't think that was even pickleball. I thought that was just Stacy holding on to whatever emo we had left in him.
Man. So pickleball is one of your passions. I want to do an intro real quick, official intro to Stacy Stocking, licensed clinical mental health counselor, licensed substance use disorder counselor, and licensed therapeutic recreational specialist with a full-time position at Chateau Health and Wellness, formerly Chateau Recovery, as one of the counselors, one of the amazing counselors, a lot of very well known for some of the interactions you have with the clients, and more specifically, day excursion of Knight and Rusty Armor. Most people have heard. If you've not heard of that, I would encourage you to check out that book, Knight and Rusty Armor. Stacy, yes, there it is, right there. He's showing it on the video. He's pulling it up.
Robert Fisher is the author.
I'm pretty sure it's only like a $10 purchase on Amazon. Last time I looked. I actually was just talking about this today. I was meeting with somebody. I was actually meeting with my attorney this morning, and her husband's a firefighter. And he was commenting on some of the things personally. And I said, one of the books that I'd recommend is Knight and Rusty Armor. I think every first responder should read it. It's that good.
Man, my friend Carol likes to say you can read it in the bathtub before the water gets cold. That's how thin and easy it is to read. But not all of us read like Carol does, so don't necessarily take that personally if you can't do it. And there are a few books here on our bookshelf where they've taken that literally, and we've got some waterlogged books from people trying to do that.
Well, it is a fabulous book, among others that are recommended readings. I think some of those are on our website. If anyone cares to jump on there and look, I think some of those recommended readings are on there, but that's a great one. But back to Stacy, you're an outdoor enthusiast. You're a pickleball aficionado, and you're a fascinating fellow. I just will be bold and throw out there. You do such incredible work, and I'm looking forward to this. This is round two. Of the No One Fights Alone podcast conversations with Stacy. And the first one I just loved where the conversation, it was just organically kind of went to some places. And I'm hoping that we can maybe explore some of those same things today. But what's your latest outdoor enthusiast. I know you're a pickleball guy, but you're outdoors a lot. What's your?
Well, I live in the mountains of Utah, so I'm a member of the LFC, Fucky Luckers Club. So I get to do a lot of hiking and biking and sometimes some outdoor rock climbing. Yeah, so I love spending time in the great outdoors. That's part of my passion. It's, for me, it's part of my higher power, great outdoors, spells G-O-D. And it is. It's unseasonably warm here. The golf course is green and there's no snow on it. And we had the clients out taking their mind for a walk around the golf course this morning since it's open and there's no golf balls flying at us. But yeah, I love spending time in the great outdoors and feel blessed that I can do so.
Well, that's fantastic. And that's actually really good advice and wisdom to anybody that's pursuing the Lucky Firecrackers Club is to get out and explore the outdoors and humble yourself in God's serene picture out there.
Yeah, Ben was just out fishing the other day.
Yeah. No, it's strange enough. It's been 50 degrees this week in Utah, and me and my son found a little bit of ice, and so we do ice fishing when we can, and that's good fun. It's one of those few moments you can trap your kid in a small space and require some kind of conversation to get to know him a little bit, and that's one that works for us. So, yeah, it's pretty
good fun. Good quality time, right?
Yeah, good. Lots of fun.
We call that connecting with the wonder and awe, right? And maybe it is just that fish that we bring out or the beautiful sunrise and sunset. Utah's world-class fly fishing, you know, come in, let some of our people who guide take you to the beautiful spots where you can catch and release and have some beautiful photos of yourself with a huge trout or different kind of fish. And the little valley where we're at in Heber Valley is right in between two big reservoirs. And so it's a magical spot. We got to see some magic of the trout swimming upstream earlier.
Yeah.
I guess at the end of 2024.
Yeah, we got to see a spawn. That was pretty fun. No, I think I hear that comment a lot from some of the folks that have come through the program is that they rarely have a chance to slow down. And slowing down and just noticing some stuff. Obviously, not everyone lives in the mountains, and so I think they appreciate the novelty of being in a different place and just having that different perspective. But it's funny, after we wrestle folks down and let them surrender their phone for a few days, they start to notice all sorts of little details. It's funny because, you've seen it a million times where you're talking, diving into something deep and we're about to change someone's life. And then there goes a squirrel or a deer or something just outside the window. And everyone's just like, whoa, can you believe this exists? And we're like, yeah, that's the roadkill from last week that you didn't even notice. Here we are. It's just different. So those are cool moments where we, again, that awe and wonder. It's cool to see that in people who are, fighting crime and solving the world's problems and doing all that stressful stuff. And it's fun to see them switch out of that mode a little bit.
Yeah. Getting away from the shock and awe.
Yeah.
Right? Getting away from those huge surges of adrenaline and cortisol and dopamine and learning how to rewire our brains back to just the little things that make life great. Sitting at the ice hole.
Yeah. Let's play around with that a little bit. Let's, Stacy, let's tee up kind of a conversation question related to that. If we had somebody listening, maybe pose that question of what does that really look like to be able to slow down? How do I do that? How do I disconnect? I mean, all those seem to be buzzwords in the getting healthy, mental health, resilience, community, but, I've got mouths to feed. I got bills to pay. I got, kids to pick up. I got ball games to attend. I got all these things. How do you fit in? It seems like such a mountainous of accomplishment to try to take time for yourself. What would you say to that?
I'd say you have to prioritize those kinds of moments. Because if you don't, then that's where you end up at Chateau. I keep saying, oh, I'll do it later. I'll do self-guided later. I'll sleep later. I'll eat better later. I'll recreate later. And then, you know, either some power greater than yourself or your body lets you know that, no, we're going to do it now. And then you have some kind of a health crisis, whether it's a mental health crisis or physical health crisis, that says you're going to stop. I mean, for a lot of us, especially as men, it shows up here as a heart attack, or it shows down lower down here in our gut as acid reflux and ulcers and those kinds of things. So we've got to prioritize slowing down.
Relationship health crisis, would that be on the table?
For sure. It's going to, I mean, that's the nudge from the power greater than myself, my spouse, my partner, right? Or somebody at work who says, you know, bro, you need to slow down because you're burning at both ends, and both ends are almost
burning. Sure.
Yeah. And we see that, especially with the firefighters, because they've got that long window of time off. And so I've got to be actively, you know, making more money and all those kinds of things, rather than taking time to play and recreate, right? We take that word recreate, and if we wrote it out, it really says recreate, right? Or we take the word recreation, it's recreation, taking time to recreate ourselves in all those areas of the balance wheel that we talk about, of physically, mentally, emotionally, socially, family-wise, and even spiritually or transcendently, recreating ourselves so that we can still be, if we, in the first responder culture, the counseling, caretaking culture, taking care of our the greatest generation that are coming to the end of their time frame, and we're becoming the OGs rather than being the young guns, right? We got to be able to take care of ourselves and prioritize our health so that we can do those other things that give our life meaning and purpose, being of service in our homes, our communities, and the world around us. So now, if we don't prioritize it and take time, then the universe will slow us down and say, yes, you will.
Sure.
Take time.
Yeah. No, as you say that, Stacey, I think that's something that we see quite a bit, and other folks don't have the ability to, you know, to see, is there is this argument that I think is happening kind of behind the scenes with a lot of the folks that we talk to. And that is this, kind of a philosophy that I think might be, you know, a generation or two old, of I'm going to hold on really tight to how it used to be and how it could be in some of those kind of concepts. And then what we see is a lot of folks that get really stressed by this thing that we all know is constant change. And then we, you know, I'm sure you've had many of conversations or arguments like I've had with clients where they're like, here's the argument to breathing. Here's the argument to slowing down. Here's the argument, you know, what could I buy or what could I do for Bobby if I skip his game and go and serve and protect and do lots of other things. But yeah, we've got this idea that we're somehow saving ourselves or saving our families from this thing that we really don't have much control over. But anyway, it's just an argument I think is pretty interesting that we see quite a bit, that early on in the process, I think people have just a hard time seeing. And later on, I'm not sure exactly, or maybe you have a theory on this, of why they are able to kind of switch into a perspective of investing in me, investing in slowing down is actually more of a benefit. I'm getting more than those hours of overtime. I don't know if you have a thought on how that switches or when people start to surrender, but I sometimes, like you said, it takes me pain in order to just finally wake up to some of those needs.
Right. That's an old expression, right? We grow at the rate of pain. Mm. We don't stop until there's pain. But what if we could grow at the rate of growth and stop and measure? Right, it's that balance wheel again. One of the tools we use at Chateau, or a tool that you can find in Martin Seligman's book Flourish, right? Positive psychology book. He breaks it down into what he calls the PERMA model, five areas instead of the six areas that we use at Chateau. But you know, how am I doing in all of those areas of my life? And before I experience pain or before I have to have the doctor put me on medications or prescribe slowing down, how can I be more self-aware? And I think part of that is, I remember when, last time we talked, it was like, you know, what's the three things that we can recommend people do? And one of them is I need feedback from Ben and Brad on they see what's going on. Or what I say in group is, you know, when do you know you have a taillight out? When the cop pulls you over and says, excuse me, did you realize you got a taillight out?
You know, I think.
And so I need that feedback. And I have to, and that's hard. Sorry to cut you off. That's hard because I did a crappy job taking feedback for the first 40 years of my life. Because when you would give me feedback, I wouldn't hear it was about my behaviors. Mm-hmm. I would hear it was about my sense of self, my self-worth. You might tell me I could have done a better job at that, but what I heard you say was, I can be a better person. I'm not a good enough person. And so I think especially in our first responder culture, our vet culture, and I'm not a vet, so I'm taking my experience there, but we have a hard time taking that feedback about our behaviors rather than taking it about our self-worth.
I do think there's a lot of hurdles when it comes to that people filling that space for us of giving us feedback, giving us honest, true feedback. You know, we could fill it with people who lie to us, tell us what we want to hear, or we could fill it with, you know, based upon a little bit on what you were talking about, Stacey, with the, you know, I don't really want people telling me honest truth or feedback. I'd rather have somebody lie to me, or even a more pertinent dynamic in our society today, which is this disconnection from people. You know, there's studies and data have shown that we're more disconnected from one another than we ever have been. Even, you know, back 100 years ago when we didn't have, I grew up with a neighbor 2 miles away. I mean, I understood that, but my connection was my dad. But within this first responder community, I know there's that pairing of putting people around you that don't really tell you the feedback, or just creating this maybe through social media or through isolation, just saying, I don't want people in my life to tell me truth. Does that resonate at all true to you in your experience?
For sure. I suffer from perfectionism. Mm. I want to be perfect. I want my bookshelf to look perfect behind me. I want to, you know, my wife, I went to pickleball the other day and I'd gotten a haircut and a shave. And my friends are like, who's that guy? Right? I didn't look like a wild man. Instead, my wife said, oh yeah, he looks a lot more tight. Like, is that really what you use nowadays? I look more tight? Right? I got no idea what that is, but that's what I want. I want to look tight. I want to look like I got my shit together, even though inside, it's not always true, right?
Hold that thumb up. Hold that thumb up. You're not.
Stay out of my lane, mister. Danny said, stay out of my lane, mister. She said, oh, yeah. Sorry. Right? But that's part of what I have to keep working on every day in my self-awareness. But then that in my interpersonal skills, that's where I need other people who are telling me when, you know, I'm looking too tight or my perfectionism is taking over. I'm not letting myself be human. Again, it's some of those sweatshirts and t-shirts that people wear when they're here at Chateau that say humanize. I got to humanize myself as well. Give myself the grace that I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to get, you know, wax on the thumb. I'm not going to always look as tight as I might like to.
Sure.
In a good way, whatever tight means, kids say it nowadays.
Fly. Oh, wait, that may be an older one.
We used to say, what was it? Metrosexual or something like that, right? Yeah, I got on the Chateau Health and Wellness. And I say to people, I say, well, you know, you're probably not going to go home and, you know, have on the t-shirt that tells everybody, but yet everybody gets the t-shirt or the sweatshirt while they're here. And then when they go home, people are going to say, what's Chateau Health and Wellness? Yeah. What's No One Fights Alone? And that's going to be an invitation to have a conversation about my imperfections, about where, you know, I learned more about health and wellness so that I can live a more tight life in a good way. Right?
I know for me personally, that has been a huge part of my recovery journey is, you know, I don't just throw it out there and wave the flag that, you know, hey, I'm in a 12-step recovery program, or I'm in a PTSD recovery space. But given the opportunity, I have found a lot of growth in being able to walk through that doorway of opportunity. That was the conversation this morning. It was very organic. And I just said, hey, there's something you don't know about me here, and here's this space. And when you do that, it opens up a really neat opportunity to have conversations and allow other people this their own opportunities to converse about, well, here's the challenges I have, and here's the, you know, some of the hurdles that I've had in life. And I think it lends to that honest feedback. I don't know that I was necessarily given a lot of feedback this morning, but more than anything, it just goes to that space of saying, hey, here's who I am. And it's certainly not bragging, because it's not a space that I wanted to be in, but it's the space I am in, and owning that. And I feel like there's a lot of growth to it. I feel like that's part of the conversation you're leaning to.
For sure.
No, I think that's a great point. There's a, that social piece, we're talking about in this kind of bigger conversation, we're talking a little bit about, you know, what makes us kind of stop and appreciate or recalibrate some of these goals or values or behaviors and those kinds of things. And I do think it's that connection. It's chatting with someone, usually us shutting up long enough to understand what's going on for somebody else when we start to do a little bit of that inventory or a little bit of that reflection. And I think that's one of the cool things that I like about the podcast, or even just this dynamic of talking about mental health stuff, is that all of us are wrong with these shooting from the hip sort of assumptions about what's happening for people. And when someone else has the microphone for a second, we realize, wow, that's the thing I need to work on. Or I didn't even know that was the thing I was supposed to work on. I love those kind of conversations that we get to be around a lot in our particular jobs. I think that's awesome. But I think that is what I think ends up being pretty cathartic after you go home from work and after you hang out with other folks, showing up, listening, connecting, and taking that tiny little brave step forward of saying, yeah, me too. I have the thing that, you know, it's easy to talk about Stacy because he's such a hot mess of perfectionism. we all can do that really well. It's just on a platter waiting for and we're all just waiting for him to do that because it's just a matter of time, right? But well, I think that's what happens a lot in our culture.
For I'm going to back us up here just a little bit, because I think for maybe for our listeners, there may be I'm going to circle us back to this relationship piece. And Stacy made a comment. You made a comment, Stacy, a while ago that said within a relationship crisis, you lend to your higher power, which is your spouse. Did I hear you correctly in that?
Part of my
right? Power. I'm not saying that is.
I'm getting someone other than myself to offer me feedback and reflection.
I think there may be listeners out here who would find themselves quite envious of that, of saying, how can I get my spouse to see or hear the feedback I'm trying to give him or her in this space? Right? How do we answer those questions? I mean, it is an enigma.
Okay, I'm not pimping any books, but I'm just saying, Anna Lamke talks about what she calls radical honesty. And I misinterpret radical honesty as giving me permission to be Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, or in my days, Jim Rome. You know, I got an opinion and they're paying me $1 million to tell you my opinion. So here we go. Is my opinion, radical honesty doesn't mean that I have permission to tell you about your shit. It means I have permission to talk about my shit, to tell you what's going on for me, how I'm struggling, right? How I'm all askew, rather than, hey, I'm going to tell you about how you're all askew, right? in AA, we call that, you know, I knew you wanted perfection like I did, so I was glad to give you the criticism that I think you need, rather than just shutting up and holding space and just talking about me. This is what's true for me, right? Because I can't, my wife and I, Stephanie, have been married for 43 years, and she doesn't hear my feedback unless I get permission to give it to her. Because I'm not Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or Jim Rome, and I don't make $1 million per episode, right? At least that's not what I read in my contract. But, right, that's the hard part, is practicing acceptance that other people are going to still struggle, and I may or may not have permission to give them feedback. When we're in groups, I tell people, make sure if it's a matter of life or death that you give them feedback, instead of going, well, Stacy said, if I don't have permission, I can't intervene, or I shouldn't intervene, because that's weaponizing it. Right? We want to be respectful and kind, and sometimes we have to say, whoa, but sometimes we say, hey, are you open to feedback? Can I give you some, are you open to a conversation, rather than using the word criticism? Can we have a conversation about this? I mean, Ben's a great supervisor and a great friend of mine. 7 years let me continue to work here at Chateau. And whenever I F up, and I F up all the time, it's, hey, can we talk about this? Not critical, not coming in and being my dad and putting the hammer down, right? Like my dad would when I was an adolescent, right? But coming in and say, hey, help me understand some things. Do you have time to talk? Is now a good time to talk? And so for me, that's a piece of respect, right? My mission in life is, I co-create, so I do it with you all and everybody else. I co-create a world of respect and compassion through play and education. And so if that's what I want the world to be like, I have to model that, because it begins with me.
And often,
rather than just wanting to tell everybody else that they got to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. But oftentimes that's in the midst of a quagmire of hurt and pain and toes that have been stepped on violently, you know, or I don't want to overuse that word, but you know, they're contentious. I've tried to tell you this 5 different times and you're not hearing me. So there's a disconnect within that. And what I hear you saying, is that there's a calmness and a respectfulness and a permission that is to be set, to be heard. Is that fair? When we're trying to communicate on these really difficult,
we have an agreement, right, about how we do, right, relationships. And then we keep our agreements. Right. And if we can't keep our agreements, my perfectionist goes into hiding. So then I hope you don't notice me. I hope you don't call me on my stuff. And so I have to stay out of hiding. And if I can't keep the agreement, then I need to go and I need to say, hey, I can't keep the agreement that we've made. Can we make a new agreement? And they may say no. They may say, I'm tired of you breaking agreements. And the relationship may change. Sure. I mean, that's part of what we see with our loved ones when they come in here. Some of them, their loved ones have said, you're going to treatment or else. And even when they go to treatment, they still decide it's the or else. I won't, or I'm not willing to keep doing the same old dance step. And that's where, again, our loved ones who are in treatment, right, or who, and that can be inpatient or outpatient or in your support groups, right? I have to still keep showing up and taking care of me and doing it for me, because that's the right thing to do, rather than doing it for them, whoever them is.
That's true. I think that's an interesting thing. As you started talking about this higher power concept, I think when I talk about spirituality, sometimes in groups or otherwise, the conversation becomes about what is transcendence. And transcendence, one of the definitions I really liked is something bigger than my ego, everything outside of my ego. And I think there are moments where I think some folks have been raised or just have a ton of experience of all they know is that when I get into an insecure, unhappy spot, I turn the lens on someone else and I nitpick all the things they're doing that justify me not having to be that vulnerable or to get that honest. And what I like about the transcendent sort of conversation that you started, Stacey, is that when we believe in something bigger than us, sometimes that something is being a decent dad, being a decent husband, being the kind of son or brother, maybe even when they're not providing it for you, I still believe in that giving that is a really cool part about me. And as you mentioned earlier, I think there's something really important, I think critical, about our self-worth being connected with how aligned we are with our values. I think sometimes we associate some of these synthetic forms of self-worth with earning and performing and proving and, you know, demonstrating all of these ego-driven sort of activities, when the reality is, I think the part we value the most about ourselves is that we show up, support our values, and we do that. So anyway, as we're talking about this idea of actually considering our spouse or our partner, or even starting to turn that lens and look on ourselves, I do think sometimes we forget that value that's in all of us. Most anyone listening to this podcast is on some level dedicated to making the world better, right? On some level dedicated to not just wishing for it, but showing up and providing the service, actually doing something substantial about it. And I think there's moments where we forget that same value, that same desire and drive. We just don't have the skills most of the time to turn that into our relationships, but it's the same stuff. It's the same ingredients. We just need to put some of that stuff on hold that is about me and shift that focus back onto humanizing and connecting with somebody else or ourselves, of course.
Yeah, you asked early, you know, when do those kinds of things happen? It usually takes some kind of near-death experience for us to have what Harry Vorath called a polarization of values, where our values shift. I used to think this is what was most important, but now I've survived cancer. I survived that car accident. I survived that shooting, right? I'm a member of the Lucky Effers Club. But maybe I don't want to be, so how do I forge meaning now of what do I do with the rest of my life rather than I got buried. I had to bury my friends. I had to bury my mates, right? So there's that polarization of values that happens. And then starting to live that way because it's the right thing to do rather than I'm doing it for them, right? And another way to spell G-O-D rather than spelling it the way we do, if you stack that word, getting my life in a good, orderly direction. Because most of the people that we see, whether as counselors, therapists, support groups, you know, people's lives are not in a good, orderly direction. They're askew often in lots of different ways. And so being able to find that language, part of emotional intelligence, is find that language of what are my values? What is important? What does that word actually mean? Whether it's a textbook definition or my definition of what that word means, right? That's where my one word is integrity, but am I always in integrity? No way, right? And that's where I need support, accountability for people to sometimes tell me where I'm out of alignment, but I can't see it. Or where my other values help support that ideal value of integrity.
I think that conversation around values is something that is, it's a bit of a head scratcher because I've been doing this kind of work for about 20 years and the last 11 have been with, adults and a bunch of those have been first responders. But I think the conversation that happens a lot is what took me so long to have this moment? Why did I think that other stuff was so important? And I think it's interesting that we live in a world where there is a lot of, for lack of better terms, kind of trash values. They're shiny objects. And given the way that we've kind of evolved, especially in our generation, there is a attention deficit issue right under the surface on top of a lifestyle that might be very much connected to adrenaline and dopamine and those kinds of things. And so it's no wonder how we end up chasing what we think is going to please people. And when we get in that kind of people pleasing, I'll just tell you what you need, get out of my way. I'm in survival mode, especially with our first responders. They've been in survival mode for so long. They can't remember the last time they had a single value or a concept that really rose above the rest of the crisis. And I think that's often what the distractions of all of that noise ends up getting into a spot where they're saying, how did I go from, I really, you know, promised myself as a kid, I'm never going to be that kind of a dad or a mom or a partner. And here I am later, unhappy, totally devoted to problems, totally devoted to just avoidance and control and all of those kinds of things. And I think as we talk about pain kind of waking us up, or even just some silence and some serenity and some peace and some distance, I think those are really cool things. But I think that's a moment of grief that I hear from some of the guys that I've talked to over the years, is they are kind of in awe of how many things that weren't really important had become, or why there was a constellation of things that were interesting and exciting. But at the end of the day, they have this self-esteem they have a hard time explaining.
Yeah. I mean, there's a book over here. I can't reach over and grab it too quickly, but it's called Addicted to Misery. And some of us, that's what we're addicted to, is the misery.
Yeah.
Or if I grew up in a first responder, veteran culture, I'm addicted to the chaos. Right? I'm addicted to bells and whistles and sirens and explosions. And I don't know how to just be a human being without always being a human doing.
Right.
I don't know how to just experience serenity and calmness without looking around and say, who do I need to punch in the nose around here to get some shit stirred up? I can't stand this.
Well, it's right? Not to even stir it up. It's just, and I think there's some great videos that I've seen where one of the authors I was thinking of, I can't think of the names as quick as Stacy can. But within that, there was this, I'm going to create chaos because I'm familiar with it. I'm safe within it. I know what my role is, and I know where I stand, and I know what I can do in that. And I've seen lots of folks who are on the edge of becoming the healthiest version of themselves they've ever been. And they're like, I don't know where to stand. I don't know what to do. I don't have friends anymore. All of them just want trouble, and it's drama and all of that kind of stuff. And it ends up being this kind of larger existential crisis that I'm not just committed to misery, but the only skill I've developed over the years is just finding what's wrong with people. And when that happens, I think we all wish we could just have this switch. And again, this is a conversation that I have a lot with some of the men that I work with, is they're like, I know it's a great switch. In fact, I get praised for my skill at finding problems and being tough and bold and intense and all of those things. And I know that I can turn it off when I go home. And the reality is, here they are years later getting a letter from their kid or from their spouse saying, you've never turned it off. You've turned off your awareness about its impact on me, but you just haven't turned it off. And now it's the only thing I'm aware of you. And so the rest of us are kind of on eggshells watching, waiting for you to pinpoint the next problem. But those are things I think are pretty clever and kind of they creep into this conversation. It's one of the ironies of this culture, especially when we talk about first responders, is that the very thing you're getting praised for is the thing that might create a huge wedge in your relationships. Getting really good at problem solving. And sometimes, it is a massive identity twist to turn back into, you know, you wake up and realize, holy shit, where have I put my time and my energy? Nothing against the job, but my mindset and my heart is just in a different spot than it was when I started. And now that I want to dedicate to it, I still don't have, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of reps before I can develop that muscle and be the kinder, gentler person that, you know, my kid or my spouse needs.
Yeah.
Are we diving in too deep, Brad?
Nope.
The therapist is geeking out for a second.
Nope. I'm hanging on. There's a lot of rabbits to chase right there. I think one of the back to the chaos point, I'm gonna loop it into something Stacy said just a minute ago. I think that's a good place to hide. I think you can hide that perfectionism within chaos, or lack of perfectionism. This kind of this space that we find ourselves in as first responders of, and we just and I can speak for me personally. I can stir up a bunch of shit, knowing that my life is in disarray, so I can create a bunch of chaos and make myself look better, or create chaos so I don't have to be held to a hard conversation. And there's lots of reasons, but I think that's an additional reason for that chaos, to where we can just come home, stir it up, and then we don't have to have hard talks.
Well, and like Ben said, it's familiar. It's our comfort zone. It's what we know. So it's what's easy for us to do.
Yeah.
Stir some shit up, and then I'll make it all better, or stir some shit up, and then I can just sit back, and then none of the attention's on me.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I can't count how many guys have said, I'll go into the house with the intent of starting an argument so I can get kicked out of the house, so I can have the rest of the evening to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's more comfortable to drop a bomb in the kitchen and talk about stuff that I know is going to be inflammatory, instead of saying, I need a hug, I need some space, I need some support. I'm kind of, it's been a rough day. I don't want to tell you what I've seen and what I've heard and what I felt today. And those are really big leaps, even though it's the very thing, ironically, that our families, they want to be of service too. They want to serve us. They want to connect with us, and they want to know what their role is in doing that. And but there they are, kind of confused, and everyone's walking away not getting what they wanted.
And I feel like I'm in control that way, because I don't feel like I'm in control. So how do I take control? Well, I go in and stir it up, and then I can say, see,
yeah,
I can blame the other person, and I can still have that perceived sense of control. Yeah. Here's that other book I was talking about. But that's the relationship piece. Can I go in and be radically honest and be vulnerable? Or our little book, The Knight in Rusty Armor, can I get out of my armor and step in and say, hey, can you just hold me for a minute? Can I just cry? I just need to cry. Right? The little book, Knight in Rusty Armor, tears from real feelings releases from our armor. Right? You don't have to make it all better for me. Just hold the space for me. Just be with me for a minute. But as men, that's really hard, because we're supposed to be the ones who are John Wayne, stoic, and we hold the space. We make things all better rather than asking for what we need. And again, in terms of that higher power piece, that's practicing humility. Robert Moore calls it knowing our limitations and asking for the help we need, rather than being passive, passive-aggressive, or aggressive and blowing some shit up or shutting some shit down. Be assertive. Practice humility rather than I am the God. I am the creator and the destroyer, Shiva. Right? It's okay to be practice humility. That's the healthy sense of shame. We spend lots of time talking about toxic shame, but we forget to talk about healthy shame, humility. I need help. I'm a human being.
Right.
I'm just like everybody else. Yesterday in group, it was like, we're supposed to be Superman. We're supposed to be Supergirl, or my wife, Wonder Woman, right? We're supposed to be that superpower. And we talked about it, that the S on Superman's chest, at least in the Zack Snyder version of Superman, that S doesn't stand for Superman. It doesn't stand for indestructible. It's the symbol on the planet Krypton for hope.
Mm-hmm.
So what Superman really brings is hope.
Stacey, I was on a ride along about a week ago in Phoenix, and had a great time hanging out with some very cool dudes that were, 5 years in. Obviously, we got through the usual jokes of, what are you doing here? Who are you? What are you about? And the whole time we're joking about, when are they going to read the report where I tell people about how crazy they are and how ill-equipped they are to do this work. But they were awesome. But you know, I'm aware there's a chunk of our audience is going to be in a car listening. Hopefully they lasted this long, right? And I am thinking about for those that are on their drive home or are reflecting and have a quiet moment, what are some practical things that can help them get there? Because I think obviously we represent a number of folks that have the wheels fall off and shit's gotten bad. And they're in the process of saving their marriages or their careers or their lives. What are some of those smaller things that the folks who are pretty early on, I think the cool part is they're being pretty proactive. There is some cool things happening within the first responder culture, and there's a lot of seeds being planted decades before the old crew had. You know, the previous generation just didn't know about any kind of resources. And now we've got conversations that are happening way more often than the previous generation had. But what are some of those kinds of things that kind of help us, you know, whether it's open up our eyes or take that breath or take that walk or all these little things we've talked about in terms of shifting that perspective, what are some of the smaller things they can do that actually could happen today for free? Mm.
My first thought is sitting down and having a conversation either with myself, right? Which again, in the book, The Knight in Rusty Armor, he goes to the Castle of Silence and he meets himself there and has a conversation with himself is, what do I want? Mm-hmm. What do I want as a human being? What do I want as a person? What do I want as a, you know, and I want a fast car and I want fast women and I want fast money and I want all the instant gratification. But that's not really what I want. What do I really want as a person in life? If I'm going to grow old, what do I really want? I mean, I can be nihilistic and have all the fasts and then be dead quickly. But what do I really want? And then what am I willing to do to get what I want? Rather than being an object and always waiting to be acted upon, how can I be an agent and be proactive, use my resources of being an investigator and a problem solver in a healthy way to start doing those things that will help me to get what I want? And for most of us, what we want is, you know, we want some excitement and we want joy and happiness. But we also want some peace and serenity. We want connection rather than isolation. Loneliness is a big epidemic in our mm-hmm. community, especially our first responder and our vet community. Triggers my polyvagal nerves, right? My hair's standing up. My tear ducts are loosening up, right? We need tribe. We need people who understand. I got a man here from Kentucky right now who was like, nobody understands. I can't tell anybody. And then we got here. He's like, oh, yeah, now I remember. There are people and places where I can get some understanding and some empathy, not just sympathy or some more stoicism of pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. So ask ourselves that deeper question. Get professional help if needed. Find a support group where you can process what it is we really want as people in the world today. And what are we willing to do to get it? We're willing to go to great lengths to poison ourselves, to make ourselves sick and unhappy. Are we willing to go to those same lengths to stop poisoning ourselves, give ourselves health and wellness, and experience more happiness in return? And I can't really specifically say what those are because they're different for everybody based on their culture, based on their gender, their ethnicity, based on their background and what they want. Because what the three of us white guys want may not be what other people want in the world. But having those kinds of conversations and doing inner work around that kind of stuff, talking to myself about it, and it's not easy, and it starts with getting some professional help, whether that's a tribe, a group, or a great counselor like Brad or Ben to to help you out with those kinds of things.
I think the lonely, the concept of loneliness is a pretty fascinating conversation topic, because there's, it's hard to understand how lonely a person is when you feel like you're in amongst people. And now, looking back and being part of this Lucky Fuckers Club, I can see some of my loneliest times were when I was with people. So it's really hard to understand sometimes that concept of loneliness when you're in it. And to really hear what you're saying as to, am I really lonely? Is that true about me? You know, for our listeners to say, what does that mean? What does that look like? Does it look like me? Is that the space that I'm in? Okay. And how do I now have these conversations that you're talking about, Stacy, of what do I want and how do I get that? And how do I change this path of loneliness that I'm on? Right. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Totally. The story we were all told is Darwin's survival of the fittest. And so I got to be the alpha male. I got to be the biggest. I got to be the strongest. I got to be the fastest. I got to be the sexiest. Right. And the reality is that survival of the fittest is in the jungle, and we don't live in the jungle. The other part of our brain that works is compassion, mirror neurons, empathy. That's why we're first responders. That's why we serve our country and our communities, is because we care about what's going on and we run towards danger rather than away. And we have to be willing to do that same thing for ourselves and receive the help that we deserve. Right? To go towards compassion, to go towards caring, rather than my armor's up and I'm all John Wayne of I don't give a F and I care less. Right? Because that's not really who we are as human beings. It's the armor we put on. It's the story we've been told. It's time to change the narrative.
But that's where a different level of courage, and I steal Ben's saying here, and I love, because I love the concept that he uses with this, the language and the concept he uses with this courageousness of that takes an additional level of significant courage to say, okay, I'm going to step out of where I'm, the space that I'm in, and seek this compassion and connection and tribe that you're speaking of. That is scary.
Totally. It takes huge courage, and courage is different than bravery. Right. And I have to be able to do it for myself, not just keep giving it away and doing it for others. In the little book, The Knight in Rusty Armor, he says, you know, I want to go home and take care of my family. And the wizard says, how can you take care of them when you can't take care of you?
Right.
My wife, the Delta Airlines flight attendant, says, hey, in case of an emergency, oxygen masks will deploy. Put yours on first and then help others. And that's what we're learning to do, is to be selfish in a healthy way rather than continuing to be selfish and unhealthy.
For sure.
Ben, what do you think?
I love it. I think there's moments where we forget that loneliness is more connected to understanding others and being understood. It takes me way too much to realize that I am the one that's in the way of both of those. I think those are tons of great thoughts, tons of good ideas. And I think about what it takes me sometimes to kind of slow down, is a lot of what you mentioned, that empathy and that ability to give ourselves permission to let other stuff wait just a minute. And I think I talk about a lot in group. Pain is one of the few things that slows me down, gets my ego to pump the brakes. But the better I am at slowing down, the more I notice there's way more of the pain and lots of little shapes and sizes and everyone I'm around with. So if I get better at assessing pain, I get better at slowing down and connecting with that empathy and actually jumping into service mode and actually figuring out what can I do to make their life a little bit easier, which again is easy to do on the job, right? But at home, when my kid's talking about, you know, something that I might deem lame, but if I can get in their shoes for a second, recognize that's what their pain looks like today, it changes my mindset pretty quick. But
well, I think for me personally, I find this space to combat loneliness is being present when I'm out and about. You know, that seeing people, janitors and waiters, waitresses, you know, movie ticket counter. I've somewhat blended, you know, the 12-step recovery concepts of you know, giving it away to some of the Arbinger stuff, which Chip Huth's his story resonates with me about how he saw people and he identified and it made them human in their space that they're in. And I try to adopt some of that thinking. And I've found that the more I do that, the more people converse. I mean, they start becoming alive, you know, instead of just the worker. And now, you know, this big globe that we're on, this big circle that we're all running around on is a little less lonely because now I know, I don't just know a therapist at Chateau. I know Stacy. I don't just know, you know, my waiter. I know Tim. And I start to know people and the place becomes a little less lonely. And I think that's a great opportunity just to see a little bit differently of some of these people that we're sharing space in.
And you're going to get injured. There are times that you're going to share space and you're going to get injured. And that's where I have to be willing to still take that risk.
Sure. Well, listen, this has been a fantastic conversation. Ben, any last thoughts? Let's give it to Stacy at the end, but I want to, any final thoughts on that last little bit?
No, I think we covered a bunch. I always love the fire hydrant of good discussion. I think the last part about you're going to get injured in the process, I would love it if we could look at some of this pain that we encounter as battle scars that serve our values. And those are ones we can show off as opposed to evidence of why we need to hide. So anyway, I just love that analogy. Super grateful that Stacy was able to join us. Three more books I've never heard of that now I'm going to have to read.
Stacy, I'm gonna give you the final say, and I'm gonna give you a couple of an opportunity to give us a couple words of wisdom and tips and tools for life based upon Knight and Rusty Armor or any other books. But to follow up this pain thing, while you're teeing that up, I'm gonna kind of close the loop on that and say Jocko Willink, a shout out there. He embraces that. He's got some really good audio video on. You're hurting? Good. Oh, you have something hard? Good. Oh, you have a challenge? Good. Oh, you're hurting and you're in pain? Good. That means you have the opportunity to grow. You have the opportunity to get better. You have the opportunity. And I just think this is a fantastic talk. Stacy, any final tips, tools, words of wisdom that our listeners could use to live a better, healthier life or direction?
Well, in AA, some of the old timers like to say, you got two ears and one mouth, so listen twice as much as you talk. Be curious. Remember, things are not as certain as we think they are. And take time to play. Take time to play, whatever that looks like for you. Right? I'm a lucky fucker in that I've got 7 grandkids, and I'm still in pretty good health, and I get to take time to play with them. And that's what gives life meaning and purpose, right? Take time to play and figure out what that looks like for you. Because if we don't, then we're going to be depressed. And life looks a lot darker. So hit the pickleball courts, go fishing, take the dog for a walk, connect with those who you find most important in your life. And remember, they're worth it, and so are you.
You're worth it. Go smash a thumb and live life. There you go. Thank you, Stacy. You're awesome.
Thanks, Stacy.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks, Ben.
Take care, guys.
My pleasure.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.